Hello, you are listening to an episode of Trade Talks, a podcast about the economics of trade policy. I am Samaya Keynes, economics and trade correspondent for The Economist in London.
And I'm Chad Bown, a senior fellow with the Peterson Institute for International Economics in Washington.
In this episode, we are going to try to react to the news. Because everything might change, we should be really clear. We are recording this on March the 9th, 2018, one day after President Donald Trump announced a 25% tariff on steel and a 10% tariff on aluminium. So casual headline readers might think that that's it, the trade war has begun. But there is still a huge amount of uncertainty. After Donald Trump's big signing ceremony, we still don't know who is going to be hit.
Steel is steel. You don't have steel, you don't have a country. Our industries have been targeted for years and years, decades, in fact, by unfair foreign trade practices leading to the shuttered plants and mills, the laying off of millions of workers, and the decimation of entire communities. And that's going to stop, right? It's going to stop.
So we've known that tariffs were coming for quite a while. There's been this big fight in the Trump administration between the nationalists and the globalists. You have people like Peter Navarro, Wilbur Ross, who wanted this big, bold tariff. And then you have people like Gary Cohn, who didn't. And so with this announcement, we should kind of know who won. Canada and Mexico, it seems, have been excluded based on their close cooperation on security grounds, their shared commitment to combat excess capacity of these metals, and maybe the fact that they're economically and just geographically very, very close to America.
Now, interestingly, the actual proclamation does say that imports from Mexico and Canada do pose a national security threat. So that's a little bit weird. But it also says that the best way to deal with that is to, quote, continue ongoing discussions with these countries and to exempt steel articles imports from these countries from the tariff, at least at this time. So at least at this time, for now, they're not being hit with the tariff.
On other countries, we don't know. Trump is offering these carve-outs, but they're not unconditional carve-outs. So again, the proclamation says that countries are welcome to discuss, in quotes, alternative ways to address the threatened impairment of the national security caused by imports from that country. In other words, EU exports to the US impair American security. That is the conclusion. But if the EU can find a way to change that, then maybe they'll be let off the hook.
And of course, that's a little bit strange because almost everybody in the European Union is also a member of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization, or NATO, which is the most massive security alliance in the world.
Yeah, it's all a bit strange. But okay, so I think in terms of this big fight between the nationalists and the globalists, a third group has kind of snuck around the corner and won the game. So there's this third group of negotiators. Robert Lighthizer, who's the United States Trade Representative, has been, for much of this process, his department at least, has been, you know, fairly cut out of the process. This has been led by Commerce. This isn't a USTR thing. But the proclamation says that Robert Lighthizer is going to be the one in charge of these negotiations. So he's been involved. He's a key member of the Trump administration's trade policy team. And he's been pushing for a kind of negotiation. And it looks like he's won. So this is just a massive coup for USTR, who is now going to be leading the negotiations with these other countries who are going to be fighting for carve-outs. So there's a 15-day deadline for getting an agreement, during which these negotiations have to happen. So March 23rd is the end of that time frame. Obviously, as we're recording this, we don't know the outcomes of these negotiations. But just to sort of set the scene, how much steel and aluminium has definitely been exempted by carving out Mexico and Canada?
Okay, so Canada is the big exporter of all of this. So Canada is the U.S.'s largest supplier of aluminum and the second largest supplier of steel. Combined, it's $12 billion from Canada. And this is out of $46 billion total out of all U.S. imports of aluminum and steel from all the countries combined. So $12 billion out of $46 billion is a big number. By excluding Canada and Mexico together, it's already about a third of that $46 billion is now no longer going to be subject to tariffs.
Okay, so what does that mean for how effective these tariffs are going to be?
So by Canada and Mexico being carved out, the biggest impact is going to be more trade coming into the United States, a less negative impact on the overall U.S. economy.
And that means that North American supply chains are going to be disrupted.
That's exactly right. A lot of these steel and aluminum makers are part of multinational companies, and they have these strong linkages already in the North American region. Once we get beyond the Canada-Mexico carve-out, it really then depends. If all the other countries just get hit with that same 25% tariff, that's one thing. But this proclamation allows for the possibility that the tariff on everybody else might actually go up. Or other countries might get carved out as well. So it's really unclear as to what the overall impact on imports into the U.S. is going to be until we know for sure who it is that's getting carved out and what the final tariffs on all these other countries are going to be.
Okay, so on these other carve-outs, let's talk about what's at stake here.
Okay, so let's start with the European Union. It turns out they're really big. So they're actually the largest supplier of steel into the U.S. market. And you combine that with their aluminum, and they supply about $7 billion a year of those products. So they're the second biggest exporter after Canada. Now, as listeners should also remember, though, a country that we haven't talked about yet, and the sort of the source of all the problem behind this is China. China ends up being really barely hit by these potential tariffs. And that's because over 90% of their exports into the U.S. of steel and aluminum are already subject to special tariffs under these unfair trade laws, anti-dumping, countervailing duties. Only 6% of U.S. steel and aluminum imports in 2017 were actually coming in from China.
Okay, so in summary, these tariffs could affect quite a lot of metals trade, but not necessarily from the countries one might expect, had one listened to all the president's campaign rhetoric. Okay, so next we have a NAFTA negotiation. So apparently the last round just turned into a kind of big forum on what was going on with the 232. So Chrystia Freeland, who's the Canadian foreign minister, turned up early to talk to Republican senators. It was a pretty hot topic, even though officially I think the statements coming out were that both Canada and Mexico were trying to draw a really sharp distinction between the steel process and the NAFTA process. So, you know, the interesting thing about this proclamation, essentially Trump saying, hey, we'll give you a sweet deal on steel and aluminium as long as we get a good NAFTA negotiation outcome, is that it's not necessarily helpful for getting a good NAFTA deal. There's a reason trade negotiators like to have their negotiations behind closed doors. In these big disagreements, what you want to avoid doing is losing face. And essentially what the US is doing is holding a gun to the heads of Canada and Mexico. So now if they agree to something, they have to go back to their voters who suspect that they've only agreed because of the risk of these steel tariffs. That's a really bad position for them to be in. It could actually make getting an agreement harder.
Yeah, and also it's hard to imagine any conclusion to these NAFTA negotiations that would strip out, for example, some of the enforcement provisions that Canada and Mexico have really been fighting to keep in there that the Trump administration wants to eliminate. Now that they're seeing the threat of steel and aluminum tariffs, you could really understand why. Imagine a scenario where Canada and Mexico agree to give up those enforcement provisions in exchange for not getting hit with these tariffs on steel and aluminum. But then 6 months from now, a year from now, once the deal is in place, the Trump administration decides to slap some new tariffs on steel and aluminum. Well, now because of the new deal, Canada and Mexico don't have a way of defending themselves and enforcing their rights. So there's just no way I think that they're going to agree to this kind of outcome.
Yeah, and I'm not sure these other negotiations with these other countries who want to get carved out are going to go very well either. So again, you have this problem, which is that they're being threatened. And any deal that you make with a threat is very difficult to sell at home. It makes the politics within the EU very difficult. And the other thing is that I'm not entirely sure what the outcome of a negotiation might look like. So the EU and Japan have already been cooperating with the US on curbing some of this, you know, overcapacity that they're so worried about. How are they going to somehow negotiate and persuade the US that actually they should be doing more?
One of the possibilities for a negotiated outcome might be these things called voluntary export restraints, or VERs. We saw a lot of these in the 1980s. So one problem with these things is they are now technically illegal under the WTO. Now, that being said, if countries agree to do them, then they can still happen. So that may not be a limiting factor. But more practically, voluntary export restraints are really hard to negotiate. If I'm the EU or Japan, I don't want to be the only one agreeing to restrain my exports if nobody else is going to have to. So just coordinating all of these exporting countries to voluntarily hold back their trade just seems like a really difficult task as well.
Okay, well, I suppose we will just have to watch that negotiations space. But, okay, so say this goes really, really badly wrong. Suppose these negotiations fail completely, then we do have a pretty good idea of what happens next. So the EU has been laying out in some detail what it would do if it was caught under these tariffs.
On March 7th, the European Trade Commissioner Cecilia Malmström gave a press conference explaining what the European Union's approach was going to be if they ended up actually being hit by these Trump tariffs.
The report by the US Department of Commerce suggests that the US steel imports should be reduced by 15 million tons. So there could be a surge of steel and aluminium imports into the EU following US tariffs. We are therefore getting ready to put in place our own safeguard measures. We will be carrying out measures that maintain the existing openness of the EU market as much as possible. And we will be urging our trading partners to do likewise. We do not want to encourage further closing of steel and aluminium markets worldwide.
So what she's talking about here is the EU is getting ready to potentially implement their own safeguard, their own set of import restrictions to prevent something that's called trade deflection, or something that Meredith Crowley and I called trade deflection in a paper that we wrote a long time ago. And this is relatively normal. So Cecilia Malmström is worried that about 50 million metric tons of trade that's going to be shut out of the U.S. market in steel is now going to have nowhere to go, and it's going to start flooding into the EU's market. Now, this isn't retaliation. This is them just dealing with a surge of imports, but it is likely to negatively impact some trading partners, perhaps Brazil or Russia. Could lead to trade tensions. Now, we have seen this happen at other points in history. So back in 2002, for example, when the George W. Bush administration imposed a very large safeguard on imports of steel coming into the United States, out of this same fear of trade deflection, the Europeans, China, a number of other countries slapped tariffs on basically the same steel products. So I think we can expect to see the same thing happening this time around as well.
They're also going to use the World Trade Organization's rules to defend themselves, and that's in two different ways. Here's Cecilia Malmström again.
The first track is that we would prosecute our rights in the WTO. We are talking to different partners across the world to see who are also impacted by these measures in order to try to coordinate our efforts. And these contacts are ongoing, of course.
So they're going to file an official complaint at the WTO. The Trump administration is going to claim that this is a national security issue. And the EU is going to claim that it's not. And that by raising their tariffs, the US is breaking the commitments it made when signing up to the WTO's rules. Here's Cecilia Malmström again.
From what we understand, the motivation of the US is an economic safeguard measure in disguise, not a national security measure. That means that the EU is entitled to make use of the WTO safeguard agreement to rebalance benefits that we have given to the US in the past. This would be done by carrying out measures that match the economic loss suffered by us because of the US move. In certain cases, provided very specific criteria are met, this rebalances is allowed to take place immediately.
So just to explain a little bit more about how this works, so there are these rules under the agreement on safeguards.
That's Section 8.3 for all you trade law geeks out there.
Section 8.3. So we got to commit that one to memory because I have a feeling we're going to hear a lot about it. So the rules on safeguards have this special clause, which basically say that if a safeguard tariff is imposed on imports that weren't increasing in absolute levels, so they're basically the same as they were last year, then that special clause allows for trading partners that are hit with the safeguard to request compensation almost immediately, or what Cecilia Malmström has called a rebalancing.
So that compensation is limited. You can't hit back by more than the amount of the trade that you lost as a result of this kind of tariff under these subset of conditions. And so the EU has done this calculation for itself, and it reckons that it can hit back to the tune of 2.8 billion euros worth of US exports to the EU. And in non-euros, that's about $3.4 billion. And so that's based on these steel products that aren't surging. So there's a list of products that they're going to retaliate on. And And it's worth noting that that list does not relate to aluminium. It only relates to a certain subset of products on steel. Essentially, the case on aluminium is less clear-cut, because I think some aluminium products have been increasing from the EU to the US. And so they've said, fine, we're going to focus on the more obvious case, which is the subset of steel imports, where they really haven't been increasing.
So the EU is planning a 25% tariff. They've drawn up a list of products that they import from the United States. That list could still change because the EU has this consultations process internally, and they want to make sure that their consumers aren't going to be hit too badly, which is ultimately going to be inevitable when they end up imposing these higher tariffs. But the list does make for fun reading. So it includes Harley-Davidson motorcycles, cranberries, dairy products. So these are a lot of things that are made in Wisconsin. So that's the home of Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House of Representatives. So we've got Levi Jeans, whose headquarters are in San Francisco, California. So that's Nancy Pelosi's district. She's the House Minority Leader. And we've got whiskey. So we've got half a billion euros of that stuff. That's Mitch McConnell's home state of Kentucky. Mitch McConnell's the Senate Majority Leader. So we've got boats, T-shirts, manicure and pedicure preparations. I don't know how that made the list. But you can see a strategy here. The Europeans are potentially trying to hit American legislators that are important.
Yeah, at this point, I've kind of become resigned to the fact that my job is more about law than economics. And that, you know, there is this big question of whether they can do this legally.
Me too. So rather than you and I speculating, we decided to bring in an actual legal expert. Here's Jennifer Hillman from Georgetown Law School. So Jennifer is a former WTO appellate body member, a former U.S. ITC commissioner. She is the legal expert on WTO matters. We asked Jennifer about the EU's claim that even though the U.S. says these Section 232 tariffs on steel and aluminum are in the name of national security, in fact, they're safeguard tariffs, and therefore the EU can retaliate in this way. We asked her if there was any legal precedent for the WTO accepting that sort of EU argument.
The answer is really no, because we are all in very uncharted waters. It has been more than 30 years since the United States has last used this Section 232 to impose any import restraints. So there's certainly no WTO precedent or anything else for thinking about how to consider an action under 232. There is, however, WTO precedent for a member calling something a tariff or a quota or something and having a panel of the WTO determine that is, in fact, something else. So in both a case involving Chile price bans and in a case involving Indonesia, the member involved said that a measure was one thing and the panels and the WTO appellate body said, no, in fact, it was something else. So here you would have the United States saying this is a national security measure, and you would have the EU, and then presumably at some point a panel or the WTO saying no, in fact, it's a safeguard. And the clear argument of the European Union is going to be this looks like a safeguard, it acts like a safeguard, and if you listen to what the president said about why he was doing this, it sounds very much like a safeguard in that he's talking about the injury to the U.S. steel industry, the increase in the volume of imports coming in from the world, the concerns over capacity utilization in the U.S. industry, all terms that much more sound as though it were an injury determination under the safeguards agreement. So the contention of the European Union is likely to be, since this looks like a safeguard, sounds like a safeguard, behaves like a safeguard, it's appropriate for them to treat it as a safeguard. And if it is a safeguard, then they would have the right, after 30 days of consultation, to take an immediate action to rebalance the trading relationship between the United States and the EU.
So we also asked her about how all this might end up playing out legally.
The United States' counterclaim is clearly going to be, first of all, that it's not the EU that gets to decide whether this is a safeguard or something else. That should be left to the WTO panel and the WTO dispute settlement process, and it's not something the EU can unilaterally do. The second thing clearly the United States is going to contend is that they are allowed to do these tariffs under the name of national security, and that there is a clear exception in the WTO in the form of Article 21 of the GATT that allows countries to take measures that are necessary for their essential security. The The United States is correct in that the terms of Article 21 are to some degree self-judging, in that it says that members may take actions, including this kind of an action, if they, the member, considers it to be essential. The problem for the United States is that Article 21 says that members may take actions which they consider in their own judgment to be necessary for the protection of their essential security interest, but then limits it to measures relating to fissionable materials or nuclear materials, or measures relating to the traffic in arms, ammunition, or implements of war, or taken in a time of war or other emergency in international relations. And the problem for the United States is they're not making any of those claims. They're trying to read out of the WTO Article 21 language this notion of a connection to war or arms or nuclear materials, and trying to say that any measure that a member says is essential to its security interests in its own judgment somehow qualifies for this broad brush exclusion from the rest of the rules.
So what Jennifer is saying here is that this is really pretty dangerous for the entire WTO system. But the big question is why? So she continued on.
There is virtually no precedent in the WTO system on how to really interpret Article 21 of the GATT. There were no panel reports that were adopted in the old GATT days, and since the WTO has come into existence since 1995, there have been, up until very recently, no challenges in which Article 21 has been invoked. Only recently, in disputes involving Russia and Ukraine, and then more recently in disputes involving claims by Qatar that the embargoes that were created by the United Arab Emirates, Saudi Arabia, and others are violations of Article 21. In those disputes, the United States has contended at the dispute settlement body that if an Article 21 defense is raised, the panel is then immediately deprived of jurisdiction to hear the case. So the argument that the United States has made in the case between the United Arab Emirates and Qatar is, as soon as Article 21 is raised as the defense, because it is a self-judging provision, the panel should simply acknowledge that Article 21 has been raised and go home. So the United States is obviously going to contend that in this instance, in which there's been a challenge raised to the United States' tariffs under 232, under a national security guise, that the panel simply is not going to be able to judge, that the WTO dispute settlement system is not going to be able to render a judgment at all. And that is fairly dangerous, because it is suggesting that an issue as basic as tariffs is now outside of the scrutiny of the WTO, which is supposed to be the keeper of rules on everything connected to tariffs and trade. So it's a fairly dangerous road that the United States is going down by asserting that they can apply these tariffs and defend them under a national security ground.
So ironically, if there's one small ray of hope in all of this, it's that these WTO disputes do take years to play themselves out. So there's the potential that some of the political difficulties behind all of this back and forth may have worked themselves out in the meantime, and we don't actually get to the stage of having to worry about legal rulings.
And on that happy note, that is all from Trade Talks.
Thanks again to Jennifer Hillman at Georgetown Law School for taking the time to explain WTO law to us. And do check out Samaya's piece in The Economist this week. It's the one that's 4 pages long, and also the one with all the charts.
Please, please do tell your friends, your family, anyone you think might be interested in the upcoming trade war. And of course, if you have any feedback, particularly the positive kind, then do get in touch. I'm grudgingly back on Twitter at Samaya Keynes.
Welcome back. I'm at Chad Bown.
And we're on @trade_talks.
That's not one, but two underscores, @trade_talks. I am so tired, I got nothing this week. Did I tell you I've written 5 pieces in the last 8 days? And all of those charts? I had so many charts. But I had the best charts.
The very best charts.
The very best charts. I got nothing.